Chapter 18. Mean to say that this infernal beetle has any connection with your expedition into the hills? It has. Then, Legrand, I can become a party to no such absurd proceeding. I am sorry, very sorry, for we shall have to try it by ourselves. Try it by yourselves. The man is surely mad. But stay. How long do you propose to be absent? Probably all night. We shall start immediately, and be back, at all events, by sunrise. And will you promise me, upon your honor, that when this freak of yours is over, and the bug business, good God, settled to your satisfaction, you will then return home, and follow my advice implicitly, as that of your physician? Yes, I promise. And now let us be off, for we have no time to lose. With a heavy heart I accompanied my friend. We started about 4 o'clock. Legrand, Jupiter, the dog, and myself. Jupiter had with him the scythe and spades, the whole of which he insisted upon carrying, more through fear, it seemed to me, of trusting either of the implements within reach of his master than from any excess of industry or complaisance. His demeanor was dogged in the extreme, and "a deuced bug" were the sole words which escaped his lips during the journey. For my own part, I had charge of a couple of dark lanterns, while Legrand contented himself with the scarabaeus, which he carried attached to the end of a bit of whipcord, twirling it to and fro, with the air of a conjurer, as he went. When I observed this last, plain evidence of my friend's aberration of mind, I could scarcely refrain from tears. I thought it best, however, to humor his fancy, at least for the present, or until I could adopt some more energetic measures with a chance of success. In the meantime I endeavored, but all in vain, to sound him in regard to the object of the expedition. Having succeeded in inducing me to accompany him, he seemed unwilling to hold conversation upon any topic of minor importance, and to all my questions vouchsafed no other reply than "he shall see." We crossed the creek at the head of the island by means of a skiff, and, ascending the high grounds on the shore of the mainland, proceeded in a northwesterly direction, through a tract of country excessively wild and desolate, where no trace of a human footstep was to be seen. Legrand led the way with decision, pausing only for an instant, here and there, to consult what appeared to be certain landmarks of his own contrivance upon a former occasion. In this manner we journeyed for about 2 hours, and the sun was just setting, when we entered a region infinitely more dreary than any yet seen. It was a species of table land, near the summit of an almost inaccessible hill, densely wooded from base to pinnacle, and interspersed with huge cracks, that appeared to lie loosely upon the soil, and in many cases were prevented from precipitating themselves into the valleys below, merely by the support of the trees against which they reclined. Deep ravines, in various directions, gave an air of still sterner solemnity to the scene. The natural platform to which we had clambered was thickly overgrown with brambles, through which we soon discovered that it would have been impossible to force our way but for the scythe, and Jupiter, by direction of his master, proceeded to clear for us a path to the foot of an enormously tall tulip tree, which stood, with some 8 or 10 oaks, upon the level, and far surpassed them all, and all other trees which I had then ever seen, in the beauty of its foliage and form, in the wide spread of its branches, and in the general majesty of its appearance. When we reached this tree, Legrand turned to Jupiter, and asked him if he thought he could climb it. The old man seemed a little staggered by the question, and for some moments made no reply. At length he approached the huge trunk, walked slowly around it, and examined it with minute attention. When he had completed his scrutiny, he merely said, "Yes, massa, jump climb any tree he ever see in he life. Then up with you, as soon as possible, for it will soon be too dark to see what we are about." "How far must it go up, massa?" inquired Jupiter. "Get up the main trunk first, and then I will tell you which way to go and here stop. Take this beetle with you. The bug, Massa Will, the ghoul bug, cried the Negro, drawing back in dismay. At for Massa's tote the bug way up the tree, DN if I do. If you are afraid, jump, a great big Negro like you, to take hold of a harmless little dead beetle, why you can carry it up by this string, but, if you do not take it up with you in some way, I shall be under the necessity of breaking your head with this shovel. What the matter now, Massa? Said Jup, evidently shamed into compliance. Always want for to raise fuss with old nigger. Was only funnin anyhow. Me feared the bug. What I care for the bug. Here he took cautiously hold of the extreme end of the string, and, maintaining the insect as far from his person as circumstances would permit, prepared to ascend the tree. In youth, the tulip tree, or Liriodendron tulipiferum, the most magnificent of American foresters, has a trunk peculiarly smooth, and often rises to a great height without lateral branches. But, in its riper age, the bark becomes gnarled and uneven, while many short limbs make their appearance on the stem. Thus the difficulty of ascension, in the present case, lay more in semblance than in reality. Embracing the huge cylinder, as closely as possible, with his arms and knees, seizing with his hands some projections, and resting his naked toes upon others, Jupiter, after one or two narrow escapes from falling, at length wriggled himself into the first great fork, and seemed to consider the whole business as virtually accomplished. The risk of the achievement was, in fact, now over, although the climber was some 60 or 70 feet from the ground. Which way must it go now, Massa Will, he asked. Keep up the largest branch, the one on this side, said Legrand. The Negro obeyed him promptly, and apparently with but little trouble, ascending higher and higher, until no glimpse of his squat figure could be obtained through the dense foliage which enveloped it. Presently his voice was heard in a sort of halloo. How much further is got to go? How high up are you? Asked Legrand. Ever so fur, replied the Negro. Can see the sky through the top of the tree. Never mind the sky, but attend to what I say. Look down the trunk and count the limbs below you on this side. How many limbs have you passed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 by done past 5 big limb, Massa, upon this side. Then go one limb higher. In a few minutes the voice was heard again, announcing that the 7th limb was attained. Now, jump, cried Legrand, evidently much excited. I want you to work your way out upon that limb as far as you can. If you see anything strange, let me know. By this time what little doubt I might have entertained of my poor friend's insanity was put finally at rest. I had no alternative but to conclude him stricken with lunacy, and I became seriously anxious about getting him home. While I was pondering upon what was best to be done, Jupiter's voice was again heard. Most feared for to venture upon this limb very far, tis dead limb pretty much all the way. Did you say it was a dead limb, Jupiter? Cried Legrand in a quavering voice. Yes, Massa, him dead as the door nail done up for sartin done departed this here life. What in the name of heaven shall I do? Asked Legrand, seemingly in the greatest distress. Do, said I, glad of an opportunity to interpose a word, why come home, and go to bed. Come now. That's a fine fellow. It's getting late, and, besides, you remember your promise. Jupiter, cried he, without heeding me in the least, do you hear me? Yes, Massa Will, hear you ever so plain. Try the wood well, then, with your knife, and see if you think it very rotten. Him rotten, Massa, sure enough, replied the Negro in a few moments, but not so very rotten as mought be. Mought venture out little way upon the limb by myself, that's true. By yourself? What do you mean? Why, I mean the bug. Tis very heavy bug. Suppose I drop him down fuss, and then the limb won't break with just the weight of one nigger. You infernal scoundrel! Cried Legrand, apparently much relieved. What do you mean by telling me such nonsense as that? As sure as you drop that beetle, I'll break your neck. Look here, Jupiter, do you hear me? Yes, massa, needn't hollow at poor nigger that style. Well, now listen. If you will venture out on the limb as far as you think safe, and not let go the beetle, I'll make you a present of a silver dollar as soon as you get down. I'm gwine, massa will deed I is, replied the negro very promptly. Us out to the end now. Out to the end. Here fairly screamed Legrand. Do you say you are out to the end of that limb? Soon be to the end, massa oh. Lord gole marcy. What is this here pon the tree? Well, cried Legrand, highly delighted, what is it? Why, 'tain't nothin', but a skull somebody been left him head up the tree, and the crows done gobble ebery bit ob the meat off. A skull, you say? Very well, how is it fastened to the limb? What holds it on? Sure enough, massa, must look. Why, this very curious circumstance. Pon my word, there's a great big nail in the skull, what fastens ob it onto the tree. Well now, Jupiter, do exactly as I tell you, do you hear? Yes, massa. Pay attention, then find the left eye of the skull. Who? That's good. Why, they ain't no eye left at all. Curse your stupidity, do you know your right hand from your left? Yes, I knows that knows all about that is my left hand, what I chops the wood with. To be sure, you are left-handed, and your left eye is on the same side as your left hand. Now, I suppose, you can find the left eye of the skull, or the place where the left eye has been. Have you found it? Here was a long pause. At length the negro asked, is the left eye of the skull on the same side as the left hand of the skull too? Cause the skull ain't got not a bit o' a hand at all, never mind. I got the left eye now, here the left eye. What must do with it? Let the beetle drop through it, as far as the string will reach, but be careful, and not let go your hold of the string. All that done, massa will, mighty easy thing for, to put the bug through the hole, look out for him there below. During this colloquy no portion of Jupiter's person could be seen, but the beetle, which he had suffered to descend, was now visible at the end of the string, and glistened, like a globe of burnished gold, in the last rays of the setting sun, some of which still faintly illumined the eminence upon which we stood. The scarabaeus hung quite clear of any branches, and, if allowed to fall, would have fallen at our feet. Legrand immediately took the scythe, and cleared with it a circular space, 3 or 4 yards in diameter, just beneath the insect, and, having accomplished this, ordered Jupiter to let go the string, and come down from the tree. Driving a peg, with great nicety, into the ground, at the precise spot where the beetle fell, my friend now produced from his pocket a tape measure. Fastening one end of this at that point of the trunk of the tree which was nearest the peg, he unrolled it till it reached the peg and thence further unrolled it, in the direction already established by the 2 points of the tree and the peg, for the distance of 50 feet, Jupiter clearing away the brambles with the scythe. At the spot thus attained a second peg was driven, and about this, as a center, a root circle, about 4 feet in diameter, described. Taking now a spade himself, and giving one to Jupiter and one to me, Legrand begged us to set about digging as quickly as possible. To speak the truth, I had no special relish for such amusement at any time, and, at that particular moment, would willingly have declined it, for the night was coming on, and I felt much fatigued with the exercise already taken. But I saw no mode of escape, and was fearful of disturbing my poor friend's equanimity by a refusal. Could I have depended, indeed, upon Jupiter's aid, I would have had no hesitation in attempting to get the lunatic home by force, but I was too well assured of the old negro's disposition to hope that he would assist me, under any circumstances, in a personal contest with his master. I made no doubt that the latter had been infected with some of the innumerable southern superstitions about money buried, and that his fantasy had received confirmation by the finding of the scarabaeus, or, perhaps, by Jupiter's obstinacy in maintaining it to be bug of real gold. a mind disposed to lunacy would readily be led away by such suggestions, especially if chiming in with favorite preconceived ideas, and then I called to mind the poor fellow's speech about the beetles being the index of his fortune. Upon the whole, I was sadly vexed and puzzled, but, at length, I concluded to make a virtue of necessity, to dig with a good will, and thus the sooner to convince the visionary, by ocular demonstration, of the fallacy of the opinion he entertained. The lanterns having been lit, we all fell to work with a zeal worthy a more rational cause, and, as the glare fell upon our persons and implements, I could not help thinking how picturesque a group we composed, and how strange and suspicious our labors must. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.